Okay, welcome to this Gustavus City Council's regular work session of June 1st, 2020. It's 5:30. Madam Clerk, can you call roll, please?
Councilmember Owens.
Present.
Councilmember Warner.
Present.
Councilmember Taylor.
Here.
Councilmember Clark.
Present.
Councilmember Van der Zanden.
Here.
Vice Mayor Cannamore.
Here.
And Mayor Kaspit.
Here.
All right, everybody is here.
Okay, great, thanks. First on the agenda will be our general meeting minutes from, what I want to do here first is step through our proposed agenda for next week. So before we get on to our list of tasks, we have at the end. But anyway, so first on our agenda is going to be approval minutes. I saw the meeting minutes soon after the meeting. They looked good to me. I think I might have had a small change. But does anybody else have any corrections for the minutes that Karen needs to know about? Okay, doesn't look like that. So I guess those will go into the meeting packet as they are here. Next on the list will be the staff reports and committee and staff reports. I'm not sure, Travis, did you want to say something real quick about COVID update, or do you want to just hold?
I can talk real fast. I'll get it done and over with.
Okay, go ahead.
So real quick, the only real things that I've been working on and trying to get in order is what the governor has put out for the interstate travel and trying to decipher all of that stuff. So we're working with search and we're working with and trying to get a connection with the state to get a meeting with Cal and myself and Tom. Hopefully we can all be on the same call where we can get a similar call to like what Sitka and Juneau and Ketchikan have had on the governor and Zink and his commission explaining what this and how this is all going to work for the small communities. Most of you saw that our name wasn't on the list for the for a contractor to be coming and asking for papers when they get off the plane. As soon as I found that out, I got a hold of the IC for the state, and they're working through the planning department on trying to get that. So that will be something that we have, and those will be jobs within our community, actually, I think, that we can hire out to make that work when that day comes. Also, I'm working with search, trying to get if you guys read it, it says if they didn't test 72 hours prior to coming to Alaska, that they have to test at the airport of departure, which means we have to figure out that search is figuring out that system. So I did get an email today that I forwarded on to a couple of council or to Cal and to Tom that search is proposing to do the contract for testing within Wrangell, Sitka, and Gustavus. Those are the three communities that they serve that have planes that land here where people can get directly off without having to go through this procedure first. So they are, they proposed that to the state to do. So that saved me a bunch of calls and emails today. So I will be following up with that and making sure that we can logistically get that done before the 5th happens and that we're set up to do that. So I'm just really pushing the state to answering our phone calls right now I know they're working with all the bigger communities on making this work also, but how it's going to work for our smaller towns and for us to figure out how this is all going to work. Most of that guidance isn't out. If you've been to the website, the guidance isn't out. I've talked to other emergency managers and there's a million questions that they all have that haven't been answered yet. And they just are still trying to figure out everything that's going to happen on that end. So we're working on that, getting that all done. So that will be ready on the 5th when that, mandate changes. I think that's really about it. So I'm just working on that one, and I've been communicating, talking with a few of the charter operators also, and trying to just see what their plans are and how they're, what they're doing. I'm going to call again tomorrow, or hopefully we talk again tomorrow after this work session has happened, and after we have maybe gotten a little more guidance from the state on what we're going to do. So that's my quick update. Other than that, yeah, that's it for now. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Travis. Any council members have a question for Travis for quick question or anything? Go ahead.
Hi, Travis. Shelley. Is there any chance of having a public EOC meeting to inform the community once we know what the changes are going to be?
Once we figure it all out, we'll definitely, whether it's a public Zoom meeting or whether it's just the information being put out, we will definitely at least start by getting all the information put out so everybody knows what it is and all that good stuff. I do want to pass on, I'll wait and deal with that later. But as soon as I get all the information, I will make sure that the community and the council and everybody is aware of what those are and how that all is going to work. It's a lot of small logistical stuff and trying to support. I'm just trying to help support Lisa through this because she's busy on her own end. So I have that ability to help logistically get this going. So that's what I'm trying to work on right now. And once it's all said and done and search gives us all their information, that's the hardest thing, is getting that information from search. So once we get all that, we'll pass it all on.
Okay, go ahead, Susan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, Travis, at our second Economic Stabilization Task Force meeting, there were a number of visitor industry owners that were present, and they seemed to be in something of agreement about in their mitigation plans practicing segregation of their clients from the general population in Gustavus. Would it be possible, are they turning their mitigation plans into you? Would it be possible for the rest of the community to be able to see those plans, and so that the rest of us can know what some of the charter folks and the lodging folks are planning on and committing to doing? Thanks.
Thank you, Susan. The plan that I've been getting from, I've been working and talking closely with Forrest Braden, and the plan that I have is just kind of a draft. We've all been waiting for this day to come, or this last mandate to be updated and changed. And then they're probably going to rework that a little bit and figure out how they're going to do that. They do have a pretty good plan. It sounds pretty good on paper. Everything changes once the people get off the jet. That's going to be once the plan has to be put into action, we'll see how that goes. But the only thing and I brought it up to Forrest once, and I know he's on this listening, so maybe he's got a better answer for it later when we talk. But my only concern with with the whole plan of not intermixing with the community in that way is what happens when that does go wrong, and what's the consequence or the punishment or whatever that case might be for the charter captain, crew, clients, or whatever when that day does happen. So Fish Plants have good plans on just basically firing those people on the spot and shipping them out of town. So we're working to work on those. This is just the next big change. I will talk to Braden and those charter operators when they forward those on. And it's nothing that they really have to forward on to us, but they're kindly doing that to us at this time. I'll talk to them and see what they say about putting that out into the public. But I'll leave that up to them, and I'll do some more research on if that's something that we can do legitimately through the city also. But I'll talk to Braden tomorrow when we talk.
Okay, Joe, go ahead. Joe Clark.
Okay. Travis, would you happen to know how many Gustavus residents have been tested for the coronavirus to this date?
I don't have those exact numbers right now. Search only likes to share the numbers for their consortium. That includes all of their like 18 clinics and hospitals and stuff that they have. So I don't have an exact number. Doesn't mean I can't try to get it. I can ask tomorrow and see if I can get a better number for you. I'll pass it on to you. One thing that I did learn today through this whole process is if you don't test before you come into town, the state is requiring the swab test that takes 24 to 48 hours to get a result back, which means, from what I've heard from another emergency manager that's already had this meeting with the state, means that they have to be in quarantine until they get their negative test result back. So if they do fly in and they test at our airport, they have to quarantine for a few days before they can do anything. That's what I've been told.
Thank you, Travis. I appreciate that.
Go ahead, Mike. You're next.
Thank you. Yeah, Travis, I think in working with the charter operators, it's going to be very important to emphasize that if the governor's scheme is going to work here, it will be absolutely essential that they make it clear to their clients that they need to be tested before they come to Alaska and don't rely on being tested here or planning to quarantine. It could be a real delay in their trip. And it's absolutely important that they get the word that they must do that before they come to Alaska. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Travis. Moving on. I think I'm gonna skip down.
Can I add one thing to that, Mike's comment?
Go ahead, Travis.
So everybody that's listening, one thing also that I've learned is that if you fly in, remember our plane is in the afternoon, and if you fly in and don't get tested, and let's say we have 25 people on that plane that didn't get tested prior to coming to Gustavus, you have to wait at the airport until you get tested. Each test is going to take between 30 to 45 minutes to administer. That could be a long delay of sitting at the airport. The best possible route to doing this and the quickest, smoothest way to do it is to get tested before you come back.
Okay, I'm going to, some of these reports we'll just take at the our regular meeting, but I'm gonna go down to the city administrator. Tom, I'll let you start here. Probably this will cover a bunch of stuff here that we're gonna talk about later. So we'll probably be able to knock a bunch of things off the list real quick. So go
Mr.
ahead, Tom.
Mayor, Mr. Mayor.
Go ahead.
This is Councilman Clark. Have we just finished our comments on the COVID update? I have some thoughts I've compiled on this, if you'd like to hear them before we go to the administrator.
Okay, go ahead if you have some comments on
COVID. Thank you. I feel that the governor's plan to open Alaska to people from outside the state if they have a negative COVID-19 test is a reasonable way to balance protection and the economy. The business folks all have substantial investment in their businesses, and it is not unreasonable for them to have the opportunity to safely provide their services according to best practice mitigation plans. Additionally, the visitors who have invested in a trip to our area, if they are not sick and if they test negative for the virus, should have the right to enjoy Alaska along with the rest of us, according to the governor. And certainly they are expected and required to do the same social distancing, mask wearing, hand washing, sanitizing, that we do, or at least most of us do. Truly, if a local resident has concerns, that individual should limit their own activity or exposure by the things they do rather than by limiting the activities of others. Perhaps the city of Gustavus should include mitigation programs with the CARES money it has or will receive that provide protection for those who are concerned or fearful without stifling the activities of those who are not symptomatic, have tested negative, and are responsible enough to use protective strategies that are being used in many other places. Let's go with the numbers and the actual metrics instead of projections and what ifs. Just a note, friends in Hoonah said that they were all tested and came out negative. And I've already asked my question about how many have been tested here in Gustavus. Thank you for your time, and I apologize for interrupting the flow.
That's quite all right, Joe. I'm sorry I skipped you over. So let me say something about where we are right now. And some of the things I've been working on today, and I'm sure Tom will chime in on his report when we get there. But I did see the governor's press availability, or whatever we're calling it. I think there's a lot of details yet to come. I was really shocked that Gustavus didn't show up as one of these places where the contractor is going to be to collect the the forms and make sure everybody's has their negative tests before they get off those planes or get out of the airport. When I found out that wasn't there, I got me a little concerned, talked to Travis, got with Tom, and hopefully the message got to Commissioner Crum's office or the governor's office as necessary. We'll see what happens. That we're still working on that. You know, hopefully we'll get to a place where we'll get our needs met. So I've been working on that. I also had, you know, requests for sending letters to the governor over this and that and certain issues and those issues. What I've been trying to do is only use the power of the pen of this office when I can see that there's some consensus position on the part of the council as to how we proceed, and that's how I've been doing it. And I think up until a couple days ago, it was we like the 14-day quarantine for interstate travel coming in, and we wanted to stick with it. This proposal for testing came along. I've heard folks being okay with that as well. So I was along with that. But when it came up with Gustavus not being one of those places where that contractor was going to be, that would be basically monitoring and implementing that testing, that's where I kind of, you know, drew a line in the sand and said, no, that's not going to work for us. So I've been trying to stay abreast of this and keep us focused on meeting the governor's mandates and meeting Commissioner Crum's health mandates. At the same time, you know, trying not to get too far out of line from a consensus opinion of the council. So that's kind of a long way of saying be patient as things develop and the details develop, and as we get through as we go through this summer. Anyway, any other issues on COVID before we move on to the city administration? Go ahead, Shelley.
Okay, Calvin, you said that you hope the governor or the commissioner got the message about our interest in having a contractor out here, are you calling them directly, or would you like guidance from the council to do so?
We already have been in direct contact with the commissioner's office on this. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, I appreciated Joe's comments, and I concur broadly with them. I think it should be clear that what we're trying to screen out or keep out of here is the virus, not the people. And if there's a good way to screen the virus out and prevent it from coming in, that's what we're doing. We're not, we have no other agenda here with regard to visitors coming in. We welcome visitors, and we're just trying to keep the virus out. So that should be our goal, I think.
Go ahead, Brittany.
Thank you. If I'm not sure if this is a question that has an answer yet, but if it does, if it does play out that we end up having people coming in who, in theory, have their test papers, but if it happens that those people don't have those test papers and they need to shelter in place until, or you know, like quarantine until they get their test results, do we have an idea about where those people are going to be self-quarantining? Is it going to be up to whatever lodge is bringing them in, or does that make sense, Mike?
Go ahead, Travis. I think you wanted to answer.
Yeah, I can kind of answer that. I would say that the first, if they're coming in on the charter, like a charter fishing or one of those, and they have a hotel that or a place that they're staying, that would be sufficient for that. If it's a resident, so this also covers residents of Gus Davis. If you fly from Seattle into Gus Davis, you still have to have that test. That's still a requirement for people, not just out of state people. It's for everybody flying in from out of state. So we might, as a council, it's one of my things for tomorrow of talking to Cal and Tom is, if that's the case, we need to figure out something, because all of our plan A's and plan B's are changing now that those lodges and hotels are going to start picking up a lot more. So the way to have them be quarantining somewhere else is going to be a little different. It also says if you don't take this test, you have to quarantine for 14 days on the honor system. So there are, if you don't want to take any of the tests, you stop the quarantine if you come in from out of state. But there we are. I'm going to start looking in tomorrow and talking with Tom and Cal and what we do for the people that don't have a place necessarily to quarantine or don't want to put their whole family through the quarantine process again. So that's my discussions tomorrow.
Thank you, Travis.
Okay. Looks like we're going to, let's move on to Tom, you want to take it from?
Yes, good evening. So I did call Commissioner Crum's office today, and I left a message. It is Monday, I imagine that. I would just add it to the list. And I gave an outline of what it was that we were asking for, specifically to be included on the list of communities that were also port of entry. When I listened to the governor, he made his comments about how he was going to provide for the interstate travel. The way I understood his comments is he was giving examples of ports of entry. He gave Ketchikan and Sitka and Juneau and Anchorage and Fairbanks. But he left out many other communities, such as Cordova and Yakutat, obviously Gustavus. So it was my impression that his statement wasn't all-inclusive, but was giving examples of what those ports of entries were. And he said he's going to follow up, I thought he said on Monday, that would have more detail in his plan for ports of entry. So I'm going to follow up with Commissioner Crum's office tomorrow and ensure that I either get to talk to Commissioner Crum or that our concerns to be listed on the list of communities that are ports of entry so that we can ensure we have the same types of protection these other communities do. In addition to that, I've been on multiple webinars and teleconferences and Zoom meetings about the COVID and about the CARES Act funding. That's the focus of my administrator's report. So there's the white paper that is also attached to the administrator's report, gives a discussion about what I've learned about what we could use the monies for, what other communities are using the monies for, and that's what is summarized in the report itself. For those that don't have Zoom or listening by phone, may not already know, the city is going to receive approximately $631,000 of CARES money as a maximum amount. Our first installment, which is about $381,000, will be provided once we submit our grant application to the state and we pass the resolution that is also on the agenda for next Monday. Once we use up about 80% of that, we'll get issued a second installment of $125,000. And once we reach 80% of that, we'll get a third installment of around $125,000. The way these funds work is we will receive the bulk amount of money, we will spend it and submit monthly reports to the state so they can review to make sure we're in compliance with the procedures and rules for using that money. To that end, last week I met with the mayor, the fire chief, and the treasurer, and we did some brainstorming on the types of things that we could provide as examples for the council to consider. And that's reflected in the report. I broke this down into three categories based on that discussion. The first category is city facilities, primarily looking at making the city facilities safe and addressing the COVID virus issue. The second category is funding city services, and I listed three there that we have that are on our general budget that could be converted to CARES Act funding, the Gustavus Visitors Association, the Rookery, and community assistance. And then the third category was kind of a leftover category that we could use to fund small businesses. In the city facilities, you'll see a list of examples, such as in the library having computer stations that have, say, plexiglass partitions between them, other cleaning and safety precautions like materials, hand washing stations, maybe additional iPads or laptops so folks can use those instead of having to sit close together in partitions, covered kiosks for the library and city hall to provide for information. Well, the list is there, and those are examples for the council to consider as we move into how we want to spend the funds. The city services include GVA's marketing plan. And when they submitted their budget for the marketing plan, it was based on what they recognized as limited resources for that marketing plan. I spoke with the GVA president, and Leah put together a proposal of how they could enhance the marketing plan, make it more effective in utilizing some other methods that GVA had been discussing with the Cedar Group, a consulting organization out of Juneau. I believe Lee is online and would be able to address any questions that the council would have or if they wanted more information. But just as an example, I put in the report that if we added an additional $50,000 out of CARES Act money, then GBA would be able to identify that amount of money and then work further in developing their marketing plan. The $50,000 was just an arbitrary amount that we discussed during this brainstorming session. Very similar to the Rookery. But with the Rookery, we were looking at more specific areas in which the funding would be appropriate. And when I spoke with the CEO of the Rookery, we talked about dollar amounts and uses. And just as an example, again, looking at $20,000, which was what their original request was going to be. Aaron might be on the on this work session as well if there were specific questions or comments that they could prepare for the general meeting next week. The third area of category two was something I discussed with Councilmember Warner. It was a concept of providing community assistance in the form of being able to pick up and deliver goods and materials for those who don't want to go out into the public and perhaps jeopardize their health or increase their chances of contracting the virus. The idea would be to use a local business, say one of the cab companies that are also impacted by the virus impacts to the community. And if they had a vehicle they could dedicate just for this purpose to ensure that it would be, quote, clean from the likelihood of having virus within the vehicle, then they could go, say, to the grocery store, to Seaplanes, or to any of the other services in the community, pick up goods and supplies, perhaps even transport folks around that are used to walking or bicycling but still don't want to be out in the public. Perhaps a service could drive them to the clinic or, you know, some other destination that would help protect them from being exposed. Then the third category is just identified as grants. And the idea there would be that the amount of money would be put into a grants program for small businesses and nonprofits. This could be outsourced to a grants administrator or to a agency like the Small Business Development, another nonprofit agency that does grant administration. It's also something that we could do in-house, recognizing the complexities of the grant limitations and what they could use the monies for, and not crossing streams of resources, like getting CARES money from one pot that doesn't allow you to draw money from another pot. Staff was just suggesting that outsourcing it might be a cleaner way to go. And again, these categories in this discussion is provided just as a starting point for the council to consider how they want to utilize the funding. The sooner I think we get this money out, the sooner we'll hit our 80% threshold, and the sooner we'll start reaping the benefits of the funding. Are there any questions on the CARES Act funding aspect of the report?
Go ahead, Joe Clark. You were first.
Tom, how receptive would they be to a city drinking water project? would there be a way to justify CARES money for a clean water project here in Gustavus?
Thanks, Joe. That's a good question. So one of the areas that we talked about, other communities have talked about, is what's appropriate for use of the CARES money. And it's pretty broad within the categories that they've identified. So the primary purpose is to help communities recover from the impacts of the virus, and the economy is one of the clear ones. Health mitigation is another clear one. So if we were to identify an opportunity for a water program, then if we constructed the grant application or the funding mechanism that met those criteria, we could probably do it. I think it would be a challenge, only because it's an infrastructure, a capital project, which they're not specifically looking to fund those. So if we made it more of a health or economic recovery project, we could. I just think it would be one of the more risky projects, but it's always worth pursuing. I hope that answered your question.
Thank you. Do you think it's worth the risk of the attempt?
In my opinion, I think we have a lot of other areas that we could spend this money. A water facility, even if we didn't do the study part of it, it's still pretty expensive, and I would imagine we would still have to come up with some money from the city for that project. I've had Village Safe Water give me a project similar to, for communities similar to our size, that range from $500,000 to $1 million. So the fact that we would be looking at having to create this service, I think it would be challenging, and I think we have other areas that might be more productive for the use of the funds.
Thank you.
Hey, Mike, I have your hand up next. Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you. I like the idea of grants being available to businesses, but I think the council needs to set some standards for those grants. And one thing that I think is important is the grants should only be available, grants from us should only be available for locally owned businesses, businesses that are owned by Gustavus residents and operated by those residents. And businesses that are owned by outsiders should seek grant funding from wherever they're located. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike. Those are really good comments. They're consistent with what I've heard from other communities. When we talked about doing the grants, writing them internally, some of the questions that I heard from AML during a Zoom meeting was how we would implement the criteria. Would they be competitive grants or merit-based grants or first-come, first-served grants? How would we rate them, and how would we limit the application pool? And the two ways of doing that was the predominant suggestions were storefronts. You know, you had to have a business here, say AT&T or Verizon, that does business here but doesn't have a storefront, would not qualify. And the other was locally owned. So even though a business may have a storefront here seasonally, or even year round, but is owned by someone who lives in another state, they would not be eligible for the grants. They would apply to the CARES Act funds, like you mentioned, straight to the feds or to one of the state programs. For example, commercial fishing has their own pot of money, and many of the people who apply for those grants are going to be commercial fishermen that may not actually live in Alaska but do business here. So those are absolutely fantastic comments, and if the council says that they want to do these small business and nonprofit grants internally, I would imagine we would have a work group to develop that criteria. So thank you.
Okay, Brittany, you're next. I had your hand next. Go ahead, Brittany.
Thank you. Thank you to Travis and Mayor, Mr. Mayor, and Phoebe and Tom for putting this list together. It's really helpful, and it was nice to look it over and think about some things. The list is expansive, and I know that we want to get stuff going as soon as possible. And I think I think that it warrants a work session just to take a little bit of a deeper dive with the council and have some further discussion on some of the ideas that you guys brought to us.
Thanks, Brittany. Okay,
Susan, you're next. Go ahead, Tom, if you wanted to answer Brittany, and then we'll go to Susan. Sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I just wanted to acknowledge your comments, and you know, I thought it was a good suggestion.
Susan, you had something?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to say thanks to y'all, and particularly to Tom and Phoebe for diving so deeply into the details of all this. It's really helpful having your discussion paper and all of the CARES Act funding information that you put out. I would refer folks to, it was my impression, didn't the governor say that he set up a specific pot of money for grants to businesses through Credit Union One, and that it was a first come, first serve grant program, and that why would the city want to take that on if the governor's already made provision to do that through a whole separate funding mechanism? So that was item number one. Item number two was I really appreciated that on page 12 of the packet, you wrote in the first paragraph for the use of the funds that the funds are intended to reimburse local governments for unplanned expenditures required to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic. And I think it would be good for the council to keep our somewhat of a fencing around our ideas to sort of focus on what we're likely to be successful in getting CARES funding for by focusing on that requirement. And then three, I've got lots of ideas about how to spend the CARES money, how to categorize it, what's more important than anything else. So I would support Brittany's suggestion of a council work session to dive into this, and would be happy to write up my ideas so you can see them in writing. Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. I do have a comment on that. One, the small business grants through the state, you're correct in your statement there. Not all small businesses were eligible for the funds. Not all small businesses submitted applications. And part of the grant application process in rating them probably should be, have you received funds for your small business under the CARES Act or you know, like First Family, anything having to do with some of the federal programs that came out for this. And that would then include other businesses that either didn't qualify or didn't receive any funds. you know, other kind of criteria. You know, you had to be in business, you know, last year, so that you're not just opening a business and applying for funds. There are other criteria that you would put in to help get as many of the local small businesses as we could. But category three was, again, just a suggestion for what to do with some of the funds. The other thing I wanted to mention was to remind everybody that these funds go away December 31st, and the money has to be spent. So you can't wait till, you know, December 1st, and if you're a grant recipient, and then order your supplies or equipment, and then because of the delay in getting some of that stuff here, not be able to spend the money. So it is a short window, you know, 6 months, and the sooner we can get it out there, the sooner they can start recovering. So if we're going to do a work session, I'd encourage us to do it as soon as we can. Thank you.
Okay, before we move on further into Tom's report, I just wanted to make sure that the council is okay with this three category breakdown we have here, and interested in moving ahead with another work session to maybe discuss more of the details, especially in terms of the category three grants to nonprofits and small businesses. I think, you know, the details need to be worked out to make sure this is fair and we're not double granting or forgetting people. So anyway, if that's okay with everybody, first of all, is you know, the three category split okay with everybody? Is getting together real soon now, I mean within the next few weeks, couple, 2 or 3 weeks, to talk about the details of what a grant program is going to look like, and you know, the willingness to move on this and get this done pretty quick. So everybody okay with that? Go ahead, Susan.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I just wanted to say I have six categories and I don't want to go into it in detail now, and happy to do a work session. We've got two meetings next week. Wait a minute. Anyway, as soon as possible, I support having a work session to dive into it. Yes, for sure.
Okay, Joe Clark, go ahead. I have you now.
Work session will be okay with me.
Okay, Tom, maybe you and I, when we talk tomorrow morning about this other stuff, we can come up with a good time and come up with a work session time for discussing these potential grants to nonprofits, small business.
Sounds good, thank you. The other star I have on the report has to do with reopening Gustavus. I'm suggesting that the council might want to get together and develop a work group, form a work group, to start identifying actions that we want to take to prepare and hopefully enhance the reopening process. If we're expecting that the governor's plan will go into effect on Friday, it's going to have some component of folks coming here. And there's been ideas about you know, notices going out to businesses and posting around town and asking visitors and residents to do things like wear a mask when you go into a public place, or practice social distancing, all the kind of things that we've already talked about, but putting it into a format of reopening Gustavus, welcoming people back for the summer season. Is the council interested in forming a work group? And if so, are there any volunteers? I also suggested that maybe we would include some folks from the community into the work group, maybe a couple council members, a couple community business members, and maybe somebody else of specific interest. But that way we could have some public input from those that are most involved with the visitor industry. How does the council feel about that?
Go ahead, Brittany, I see your hand first.
Thank you. I would be willing to be a part of that group.
Go ahead, Shelley, you're next.
Yeah, this actually raises a concern that I have, in that I understand that there are meetings with Lynn Brack Cruises for National Geographic this past week. The Incident Command travel planning team didn't receive an invitation, and council members weren't advised. We haven't received any information about the plans for this particular cruise industry to be coming into Gustavus. I'm concerned that we were not contacted. I guess in terms of reopening Gustavus, my first suggestion would be to include the Incident Command travel planning team, who've been actively involved in reviewing mitigation plans for the community. And then I guess one other thought, as long as I've got the microphone, is in talking with the commissioner tomorrow, the governor, I would request that you ask them about any plans that they have, or suggestions or ideas that we can deal with testing people that are arriving on the ferry and on charter airplanes arriving from out of state. So I guess back to the Lynn Brack Cruises, I'd like to hear sort of, I've been hearing varying plans, you know, about what they have in mind. And I guess I'd like to hear from Tom, you know, what exactly is going on? What are they proposing?
Thanks, Shelley. That's some good questions there. Let me circle back to Lindblad, that the ferry testing and the private planes, private boats, that was also discussed by the governor on Friday. And he said that those were elements of the June 5th mandate or procedure that they were still working on. So he did identify those and recognize those, and said that they were working on getting those plans tightened up and then brought to the public on one of his briefings. As far as the Lindblad small cruise vessel coming to Gustavus, the GVA president and Travis and myself were on a teleconference last week with a consultant for the Lindblad group, and I believe he was a co-owner or the owner of the company. And the purpose of the call was to talk to representatives, myself, Travis, and then I asked Leah to also participate, about what concerns we had, what kind of procedures we had in place. I informed them that you know, our city floats are not appropriate for the size of that vessel, or actually for the use that you would imagine for a cruise ship. That if they wanted to use the state dock, that they would need to go to DOT and talk to them about using it. And if they were going to use the park dock, that they needed to contact the park and talk to them about using their facility out there. They were going to be sending a mitigation plan to Travis, I got an email today that said that they were preparing it, finishing it up, and was going to be getting it over. So we don't really have their plan yet. All we have is the conversation that they had about what they were thinking about in terms of operation. And Travis, if I forget something, please fill in the blanks. The idea was that people would fly into Gustavus, they would be bused or transported in a contracted vehicle to the vessel. They would be quarantined or whatever the requirement was as part of the package to come up here, so prior to arriving. If they have to go through the testing as the governor is proposing, then they would have to go through that process as well. They said they wouldn't have any interaction with the community in terms of going to, say, the fireweed or the clove hitch or anything like that. They did talk about if they needed stores or supplies. I suggested that they contact our local grocer and transportation company in advance, and that way they could have their provisions here by the time they got here or needed. We're currently looking for more information from them once we have identified whether or not they're actually going to come here. If they submit a mitigation plan, of course, we'll circulate that to the council. If they have any plans at all beyond just the conversation, we'll, you know, get those plans out, and then the council can determine what action it wants to take. I talked to Council Member Taylor earlier today about, are there any revenue opportunities for the city? And we're still exploring any of the possibilities, but as you may remember from our Title IV discussions, there are some certain limitations to what we can do in that respect. Travis, did I miss anything there?
So the only thing that I would add to that is that their plan is before this, the governor's plan came out, was way above that plan. They've been working hand in hand with Dr. Zink and with the Commissioner Crum's office there. They've submitted their plan two or three times, they said, to the state. And after we talked, they were going to submit some more after the new mandate came out. So I did get that. I talked to Shauna again today, who was one of the people. She's actually listening to the meeting right now. She's on board listening. Their plan in general was basically Mike's whole idea of those emails that he sent out back in the day of the bubble and starting it down in Seattle. They meet 48 hours. I can't remember the exact one off the top of my head. Before the they depart to before they potentially would depart to Gustavus, they would test them at their facility in the little area that they have that they'll all be staying at. The test is being done by the University of Washington, and then as long as they have all negatives, then they get on the private charter plane, come up to here, and like you said, working the logistics of trying to get a bus or somehow vehicles transported out there. And the plan is to not have contact with the community and just use our airport as a thing. Their main objective is getting people out into the wilderness and using the Tongass Forest as their playground during this time, and just trying to get people out in the wilderness and do their thing is their thing. They're not hitting any town ports and hanging out in any communities. This is just a wilderness uncruise type boat that's doing that. So call me tomorrow, Shelley, and I can fill you in more and all that stuff. So
thanks, Travis. Shelley, did they answer your questions, or does anybody else have similar questions?
Okay, go ahead, Shelley, and then I have Joe Vanderzant.
In terms of how many, do I understand that they're coming in every other week, and how big are these passenger vessels? I've heard that they have between 86 and 150 passenger vessels. How many people are we talking about?
Yeah, Shelley, their boat, I believe, holds like 100, roughly about 150, 160, but they're only going to put half the people. So between 60 and 80 people is the max that they were going to put on the boat. And that just depends on also selling of reservations and all that. But 60 to 80 people was the max that they were putting on there.
And is this every other week or every week?
I believe it was every week they will make it. They'll send people out and bring new people in.
Okay. And let's see. And I assume that they will be, if they're out at Bartlett Cove, they're going to be using the facilities out there. I mean, in terms of having no intermingling with people, I think it sounds like there's probably a pretty good opportunity to have contact with the campers and other people out at the park.
They're aware of the campground being open and all of that stuff. Their plan, I don't see any reason why there would be that intermingling. They would bus them straight down to the turnaround. They'd probably walk down the dock and get right on their boat. And I mean, they're not planning on, I don't think they just want to hang out in the dock and look at the boat. I think they want to get off and the money that they're paying, play in the wilderness and go kayaking and all that stuff. So I don't see a high chance of the people intermixing with the community in these regards. And I'm pretty sure once I look through their plan, and I'll pass that on to you also as soon as I look at it tomorrow.
Okay, Joe Vanderzan, next.
Yeah, just a response to Tom's question about a reopen Gustavus work group. It seemed to me like having meetings to come up with a plan in a final format and then submit it to the council, it's kind of a long process, and I think there's a pretty good chance that whatever we would come up with would be obsolete by the time we'd get around to a city meeting. And in the end, we seem to be following the state's lead and either accepting what they've come up with or tweaking it to fit us. So I'm not sure how that would work. That's it.
Susan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I support the idea of having putting some more work into how we're going to deal with reopening, and maybe we can talk about this some more at our upcoming work session. But I would like to also sound a note of care here that I listened to the governor's Sunday briefing where he said that they had 27 new cases in Alaska in one day. And Anchorage got 15, which is the second most cases they've had, concentrated at a nursing home. But that I just want to sound the note that we exercise care about how we go about balancing our public health and our economic health. Thanks.
Okay, any other comment on this approach of having a work group, as Tom is suggesting, as far as reopening? I heard Brittany volunteer to be on that work group. Is there any other council members who wish to be on that work group, or do we just kind of wait what the state does and just react? Okay, Tom, maybe you and I can talk again a little bit more about this tomorrow and decide where we go with this.
Mr. Mayor, in answer to your direct question, I think we ought to at least wait till Friday and see what goes on with the state and the governor.
Okay, so I guess we'll pick up this discussion maybe at our general meeting next week, and after we know more from the governor. So, Tom, do you have anything else you wanted to bring up?
No, that's all I had, unless there was some other questions or comments anyone wanted to make.
Okay, moving on the agenda here. The next item is going to be our consent agenda, and there's going to be three things on that. There's going to be this resolution we talked about of accepting the coronavirus relief funds from the state in the amount of $680.53. I'm sorry, I'm going to get my glasses right here. And then there's, we're going to have an NCO to establish an AMLIPS account to put those CARES Act funds in, so it makes it easy for us to do the accounting on it. And then also there's going to be a resolution supporting Alaska Department of Transportation's airport improvement. I guess they're building, they want to build a snow equipment and removal building building to, to keep their sand dry. And there was also some talk about providing a catchment system on it to fill fire trucks with good water. So I don't know. Mike, I guess you have a question.
Sorry, I was muted. I was wondering if that replaces that falling down shack that they've got next to the generator facility. Is that the location, or is this going to get rid of that ugly building?
Councilmember Taylor, no, this is a different building. This building is on the airport. The one you're referring to, as you may remember from the letter the mayor sent, they were going to be looking at funds for doing that. They were concerned that there were some asbestos or other toxin issues that they had to take care of. We have not heard from them over the last month or two. We could certainly do a follow-up.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Travis. You had something to add to it?
Yeah, just so you guys understand, this is a $5 million project that they're looking at doing, putting in a big building for storing their fire truck, a 30,000-gallon rain catchment system, I believe is what it is, and to keep all their sand dry so they can do a better job at that. As of right now, it's going to sit between Seaplanes and Alaska Airlines in that open lot. But they are looking at trying to move it into a different area, just trying to work out some leasing type stuff at the same time. But it's a project that is in the docket for, they're hoping to get it in. The plant, they got to take it and go sell it to one more commission, but it should hopefully be in the next couple of years that they should be able to do this project.
Okay, so those are the three items on the consent agenda. Folks are okay with having all three of those on the consent agenda. If anybody wants to pull those off consent agenda for more discussion, now's the time to do that. So it looks like we're all okay with those three consent agenda items. Next, on the docket are going to be ordinances for public hearing. Both of these are something we've discussed in last month. They were introduced last month, so we'll just be taking public hearing on these and then acting on those NCOs. We've talked about them before. Is there any questions on those for Phoebe before we move on? Okay. Then we're on to unfinished business. The first one there, item 9A, is FY20-17 NCO. We're going to have to reintroduce the FY21 budget. I think as everybody probably knows, we had our, when we introduced the budget last time, it was before we had gotten the rules on the CARES Act funding, and we thought that we'd be able to use CARES Act to replace revenues. Turns out we can't. We're going to have to do follow the rules. And I guess what I'd like to do, Phoebe, were you going to talk about this, or was Tom going to talk about this reintroduction? Okay. I'm going to turn it over to Phoebe. If you just give me a chance to mute my system here so I don't get all that feedback. And I'm going to turn it over to Phoebe to explain what's going on here. I just did a really brief introduction. So bear with me, and over to Phoebe.
Sorry for that. Thanks for your patience. This is Phoebe. You can? Okay. This is the bottom of our income sheet for the budget reintroduction. In the previous introduction under state revenue, we had a separate line item under the community assistance program that was for CARES Act redistribution funds. And so that line item has been pulled out of our income. And instead, if you want to scroll down to the bottom of page 35, Karen. Instead, the balance is being made up in this budget out of our savings at this point. But I wanted to talk about that a little bit. You can see here under prior year cash balance, the number is now $252,000. So those funds, that'll be coming out of any rollover from our current fiscal year, FY20, and anything we need beyond what we roll over will be coming out of our surpluses from prior years that are saved in our AMLIP reserve account. There are a couple things we've talked about or been thinking about with this CARES Act funding and our FY21 budget here that we're looking at. The first is the idea of pulling the rookery and GVA funding out of this budget document and fully funding whatever we're the council decides to fund them at, pulling that all out of the CARES Act fund and not out of our general operating budget. So that would reduce our expenses in our operating budget. And I also, as we're learning more about what can be spent on with the CARES Act, it looks like we can cover all of the fire chief's salary starting March 1st through the end of December. Potentially will be covered by CARES Act funds, and then any other time spent by employees that is taking them away from their normal regular duties due to the COVID-19 pandemic. For FY21, since I'm still a little, we haven't seen the money yet. it seems like, and talking with the mayor and with Tom, it seems like it might be a good idea to leave the fire chief's payroll as is in this FY21 budget, but maybe add a note in the narrative that as of June 1st, it appears that we're going to be able to at least fund the first 6 months of the fire chief's payroll out of CARES Act instead of our operating budget. And this would reduce the payroll. Oh, let me get back over here for the, on my other spreadsheet here, stand by. This would reduce the that payroll line item for the fire chief by 40 grand for FY21. Additionally, and along with any other smaller hours that other city employees spend on COVID-19. Additionally, for FY20, we've been told that that's same situation for payroll. So potentially our FY20 as of May 31st, for all the employees but the fire chief, but for the fire chief all the way through June 30th, that's about 35 grand at this point that we potentially for FY20 will be able to get CARES Act funds to cover. And so those funds would be available to roll over to FY21. All that being said, I think that at this, with what we know right now, I would just leave the prior year cash balance at the level needed to balance this budget as we continue to learn more every week, with the exception of moving the Rookery and GBA funds to zero out of this operating budget and instead funding those out of the, out of the CARES Act funds that you're talking about having a work session for discussion. Clear as mud. Anybody have questions?
Go ahead, Mike, you're first. I saw you.
Yes, I've been thinking about the Rookery situation, and you know, I've always been a strong supporter. It's a very important program. It's vital to the community. We have dedicated people behind it, working on it. But I think they've got a lot of management issues that need help. I reviewed their response to me with regard to, you know, how they were addressing issues that were raised by the sort of local ad hoc consulting assistance that was given them last December. I've talked to the consultants involved, and I think there is an awful lot of need for management assistance for these for this operation if it's going to be successful and sustainable and meeting the kinds of goals that that the staff there wants to meet for their charges for the great kids that are in it. And I would like to see us have some money in the budget to provide for a consulting, some real consulting assistance, perhaps from the Foraker Group. And I talked to the Foraker Group about that possibility today, and it's right up their alley. They have done consulting like for childcare and preschool operations elsewhere in Alaska. So they have experience with that. And I think they could bring a lot to that group that would improve their operations, their accounting system, just the overall sustainability of this vital service in our community. So I am inclined to keep some money in there, and I don't think that we can probably fund a consulting assistance like that from the CARES Act. It's probably not a fit for the criteria that they, you know, that the Act has on the money. So we may need to fund some of that out of our own operating expense. I'm not sure how much yet, but I think that would be a great investment to make the rookery sustainable for the long term. Thanks.
Go ahead, Susan, you're next.
Yeah, I would like to have the opportunity to discuss this more in the work session where we're talking about funding for the rookery and other nonprofit services and small businesses. Thanks.
What the issue here is, are we comfortable with publishing the budget that we have now, which is basically kind of where we're at now. It's before we've made a decision to move GVA and rookery into complete COVID CARES Act funding. It also leaves intact the salaries as they are, but realizing that we'll have some savings from the salaries and in turn being prior year cash balances. So is everybody okay with basically that $252,000 coming from prior year cash balance instead of CARES Act funds? That's the main question we have to answer for, you know, basically publish reintroducing our budget. Okay, asking again, is there any objection to going ahead with publishing our FY21 budget with identifying what we had identified as CARES Act funding as prior year cash balance of $252,000. Go ahead, Susan.
Yeah, at this point in time, I don't think we really have any alternative, do we, to just publishing the budget as is, with making note that we're going to be adjusting it, since we don't even know, it's so early on in the CARES Act stuff that we don't know what's going to go on with that. So do we have any choice except for to publish a budget with a $250,000 budget deficit?
Well, that's kind of where I was at. It's just the question was whether we wanted to zero out GVA and the rookery and put them all in CARES Act, and that would reduce the amount of budget that we would be borrowing from prior cash balance. But we had earlier discussing those at this work session. So, yeah, we're kind of at that. Okay, well, I guess that's the answer for Phoebe as to what we publish. So we'll move on from there, I guess. I did want to talk about CY20-16, the access to marine facilities. I think Karen had told me that there were some edits came in today, proposed edits today from somebody. Now's the time to talk about CY20-16, access to marine facilities. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I guess it's up to me here to pick this one up. I think this is still important, although we need to edit it to fit the governor's current program. And I had thought earlier that if the mandate went away entirely, then there wouldn't be any need for this. This wouldn't be an appropriate resolution. However, the governor's program still has in it a provision for if people don't come up with their having taken their test or are not, they're not willing to have to be tested, that they can then go ahead and do a 14-day quarantine. I am concerned that some people may just come into Juneau or Gustavus and say, well, I'm going to just quarantine at the lodge, and they're going to go off and just go fishing, and that's not acceptable. So this mandate would make it clear that if people do that, they do have to quarantine and they can't just go fishing. So that puts the onus on them to be sure to get tested first, which is what we really want them to do. Again, we're only trying to screen out the virus, not the people. So if we give them one more strong reason to get tested before they come up, this would be it. They're not going to be able to just blow that requirement off and pretend it isn't there. They do have to get tested. This would be that encouragement. So I did email to the clerk a few changes that we would insert into that that reference exactly what the program is that the governor seems to have on order, assuming he continues on with that. And it makes the resolution a little more general in that if the governor makes any changes around details, we're not referencing things that are going to be deleted. If he gets rid of any requirement whatsoever for a quarantine, then this resolution would still not apply anymore because it only applies to people that are subject to a quarantine. So that's, I guess that's my summary of it. I would like to keep it on the agenda, pick it up, make some changes that we could put into the packet before Wednesday that just edit it to make it a better fit to the governor's proposal, and then go ahead and pass it, I hope. Thanks.
Well, the clerk is trying to get that email with your edits up on the screen. Maybe if we could, oh, I see Joe. Maybe if we can, yeah, like you had suggested, Mike, is get your edits into a new version of this in time for the packet to go out for the general meeting. And then we can, I guess, go from there. Joe, I'm gonna get.
Thank you. Joe. I still have a problem with section six, the wording going all the way to October 1. Anyone, most people reading that would think that we are closed down until October 1. If it's put forward like that, as it reads, I will probably be suggesting an amendment that it be July 1, 2020, and adding after the last sentence of section six, the words, and that the city council will reevaluate effective dates at each month general meeting. Any extension date will not go beyond the following month, if we're going to still keep this in place, but it might end up being a moot point. But if it's put before the council in its present form, I will be suggesting an amendment.
Go ahead, Shelley.
Yeah, I would just point out that the version on the screen, page 65, is an earlier version. The on page 66 is the edited 5/2020 version, which Mike has proposed that his changes be used in that particular version, which I support. And there is a an effective date referring to health mandate 10.1, so that would need to be corrected and before we send it over to Madam Clerk.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, just to clarify, I don't think in the version that Shelley came up with on the 20th of May, I think we got rid of the date that it expires. So it doesn't even reference, if I recall right, it doesn't reference it. And if it's still there, I think I'd pull that out. But as I looked at it today, I don't recall that we even had an expiration date. It just is in force as long as there is a requirement for a quarantine. If the quarantine goes away, then it doesn't matter anymore. And all it does is reinforce what's the direction of the state for people that are under quarantine anyway. So this just shows that this is the city's policy in line with the policy the governor has set forth. Thanks.
Go ahead, Karen. Karen wanted to say something real quick. So Karen, go ahead.
So this resolution was postponed from the last meeting, which is why you have two different versions in your packet. The first version was the one that's postponed, and that's the one that's going to be on the agenda. The edited version, dated 5/20, that I have on the screen right now, is what you guys have changed since then. So there's two different versions in there. The one that we have to put on the agenda that was postponed from the last meeting, and then the new version, the edited version. So Joe, to answer your question, from section 6 on the original postponed version no longer exists in the edited version, and it's addressed in section 4.
Thank you, Karen, and I'm good with this second version. I thought that the first version had been suggested a second time. So, I'm fine with this. Thank you.
I think there was still some additional edits that needed to be done. And I think Mike had some. And then he also just now had a suggestion about some other stuff. So maybe if Mike and Shelley or whoever have an interest, work with staff to get the absolute latest version completed and done and get it to the clerk by 10 a.m. on Wednesday. Next Wednesday would be the 3rd, right? The 3rd, Wednesday the 3rd by 10 a.m. That would be wonderful, and we would have the clean, updated version in our packet that goes out to the public. So that would be great if you guys could do that.
Will do.
Before I go on, did everybody's okay with Mike's suggestions, right? I mean, we don't have any dissent against Mike's edits, do we? I didn't hear any. Okay, Mike, if you want to work with staff and get that together, that would be great. So moving on here. Under new business, we're going to be awarding an RFQ for our road. We're going to be awarding an RFQ for our road maintenance. We're going to award for IT services and our library roof repair and our compost system. So all those will be happening next week as well. Okay. I guess the only thing on those four, I guess there is the library roof repair. The bid opening is tomorrow, according to Phoebe. So you know, we'll know more then. Also, Tom, I guess there was some discussion on the new the composting system. Did you have anything on that?
Well, I think Paul's on the line, and he could talk more specifically. But we had one response. The response was for, I believe it was $160,000, well above what we were looking to spend on the project. So staff's going to have to look at what alternative to take in terms of the composting project. Paul, did you want to provide any comments or any further information? Okay, well,
I was trying to unmute Paul, but I couldn't seem to do it on my end.
Well, I can pass along some comments that he had. So, of course, I mentioned that it was over budget. Paul feels it's a little high for the size of the operation that's being proposed. He sees a couple of options. One is to keep going and look to get additional funding to get the project complete. There might be a grant available from USDA, but I think if we're interested in this project, that we would want to move forward and provide the additional funding. Option two was to look at the project, maybe redesign it and come up with something that is less expensive. For example, we're replacing the failing walls of the Quonset hut. There's probably ways that we could lessen the cost, but we're also limiting the benefit. I think Paul's project was scoped out properly for what we need, not only today, but what's going to be able to provide us into the future. We like the composting aspect of our landfill. If we want to continue with that, I think we have to consider that level of funding. I'm not sure what the council would like to see us do. If this is a discussion item, we could talk about it tonight or save it and have maybe more information provided for the general meeting on Monday. Looking for some direction on that.
Before I do that, I see Paul got his hand up, so we must have figured something out. So I'm gonna unmute Paul and let him go. Hold on.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, go ahead, Paul. Thanks.
Sorry about that. Wouldn't you know that the moment you're gone from the Zoom meeting and doing your dinner, that's when they're talking about you. I even jokingly said that to Chris, and sure enough, that's what happened. Tom covered a lot of that, but $160,000 with $5,000 being for, or $4,500 being for disassembly of the Quonset, total project cost of $160,000 is too high for the project. I was figuring it was probably going to be 104, which is kind of our limit, maybe 110. I figured it would be over 100,000, but 160,000 is a bit too much for that design. It's still important to build a replacement for the Quonset. I've got some ideas as far as now I know where those costs were. Formed concrete with ventilation pipes and kind of an elaborate system, a lot of concrete walls and a lot of forms. I mean, we had a really good meeting at the DRC on the Wednesday prior, the week prior to when they had to submit their bids. It was the pre-bid conference, and you know, a lot of ideas were discussed. So I think with the amount of funding that's available, which is approximately 104,000, we can definitely build a replacement for the Quonset. It's just going to be of a different design. It's going to have concrete, but maybe use eco blocks and maybe not have a concrete floor, but just have, you know, the existing ground like is in the Quonset right now. So I've kind of got a good idea of what, of why that was costing so much, and what we can do to replace the Quonset within the budget we have. So I would like to keep working on this project. I would like those funds to remain available for the composting project. And I'm not quite sure. I mean, I don't have anything for you guys to take action on at next week's meeting. I mean, I intend for you not, or I would ask that you not accept the bid that is there for $160,000 simply because it's over budget. But I don't really have a proposal ready for next week's meeting, hopefully next month's meeting, or maybe the special meeting for the public hearing of the budget or something like that. But, you know, I want to keep going forward on it. I want to figure out a way to make it cheaper and have concrete, you know? And so anyway, that's all I got for that. Thank you, Kel.
Go ahead, Mike. I see.
Maybe if the contractor has ideas for how suggestions for reducing the cost and still meeting the objectives, they could propose maybe a cost reduction amendment with what changes they would make and then what it would cost. And then we might be able to approve their bid with that amendment. That just comes to mind as a possible way of adjusting this by negotiating with them to cut the cost, some cost out of the project, making use of their expertise and their ideas.
Could I reply to that?
Go ahead, Paul.
I don't think we can do that because this RFQ was so specific. It had a plan set and it said, this is what you do. This is the concrete walls you make. These are the sizes. These are dimensions. These are everything you do. It was very specific. So I think amending it, especially some of the ideas I have in mind, it's just too much of a change. It really would be, it's a different plan set in essence. So I don't think you could really do that and have something that, you know, a contractor could not bid on, but know how much, you know, money you're talking about. Cause it's like, okay, if it's eco blocks, how many, what kind of layout? I mean, there's just, I don't think we can really do that with this contract.
Okay. I think you're correct, Paul. Thanks.
Joe Vanderzen, you're next.
I was encouraged with Paul's take on that. And I think he's going in the right direction, that it needs to go back to the drawing board, come up with something simpler and less complex and cheaper to build. Thanks.
Hey, anything more for this, composting project? Okay, next. So we will remove award of that that award. That'll be pulled off the agenda, and we'll get the letters out. Taking care of that. Phoebe's typing away right now. And so that brings us to 10E. And I also talked to Phoebe about that one. We are going to have to move that resolution to July. 10A, I'm sorry, again, my glasses. 10H, CY20-18, the authorized investments investment allocation of our in our appropriate benchmarks for city endowment funds. So that will be moved to July. We still have a little bit of work to do on that. Moving on. That this one will be taken off the agenda. We won't be discussing it at next week's meeting. That'll be moved to July. There'll be some reports. My regular mail report will be given on Monday. I guess I better get working on that for the 10 a.m. deadline on Wednesday. And then Susan will be providing a report on the Economic Stabilization Task Force. Other than that, is there anything else for the folks? Go ahead, Susan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, could I just say a quick word about the Economic Stabilization Task Force? We've met twice with, 34 participants talking about three of the four industries for ginning up to increase our retail sales tax and address our funding. Our COVID-19 caused funding issues. I wanted to point people, I'm posting minutes, letters, suggestions from people, resources and all that on, Karen's been helping me post the stuff on the city meetings page. And if you go to the city meetings page, like for the May 21st task force meeting, you can find an agenda with the link to the Zoom. You can see the minutes there. And if you click on view details, you'll be able to see some of the letters and suggestions that people have been making along the way. Our first meeting was on a Saturday afternoon, which was a horrible time. Our second meeting was on a Thursday evening, so that was a much better time, on the 21st. So our next meeting will be this Thursday, June 4th. And it's specifically going to focus on elevating our food production capacity. So if you're interested in that, please come to the city meetings page and click on the agenda and have a look. And if you click on the agenda, you can see the link, the Zoom link for the meeting. It's Thursday, 7 to 8:15. And that's all.
Okay, thank you, Susan. That gets us down to the end. Is there any other? Go ahead, Phoebe. Okay, one thing Phoebe mentioned is we're going to have a special session for approving our budget, or a special meeting for approving the budget. We are proposing June 22nd. Is there any objection to June 22nd at 7 o'clock for that special meeting to approve, to take public comment on and approve our FY21? Brittany, go ahead.
Thanks. I don't have the exact dates, but I will likely be out of town at the end of June, maybe the second half of June.
You would still be able to participate via Zoom, maybe?
No, I'll be on a kayaking trip.
Oh, bummer. Okay. I've been advised by Karen and Phoebe that the 15th would be available as well, June 15th. Is there any objections to June 15th? I hope that would cover you, Brittany, you'd be able to make.
I think so, yes.
Joe, go ahead, you're first, and then I have Susan.
Okay, just a clarification that 5 o'clock or 7 p.m. or 5:30 or 7 p.m.
It would be a special meeting, so I would do the 7 o'clock or 7 o'clock p.m. meeting for a meeting. Susan, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was just going to suggest that we might want to do double duty on the special work session as well and do both of them on the same day. I don't know how long we're going to need on the budget special session.
This is Councilman Clark, and I agree with that totally.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm trying to talk to Phoebe and Karen to figure out timing and stuff on this. I am concerned that I don't want to cram our discussion about CARES Act and the distribution of those CARES Act funds, and then get to say a regular meeting. And then have to, I don't know, I just don't want to truncate public comment if they have it on our FY21 budget if we're trying to work out details on how we're going to distribute CARES Act funds. I would like to try to keep those discussions separate, but maybe if we want to do the work session at 5:30 for CARES Act and just know that at 7 o'clock we're going to break and we're going to move to public hearing and acting on the FY21 budget, I guess that works, but I don't know. I guess I'm still thinking. It just seems to me that we would need more time to discuss CARES Act than just an hour and a half between 5:30 and 7. We could maybe start earlier to talk about CARES Act funding. But then it's going to be a long meeting for us from 4:30 to say, 8 or 9 if there's a lot of public testimony.
No, I take it back. You're right, Mr. Mayor. I now that I hear what you're saying about.
Brittany, I got you next. Go ahead, Brittany.
Thank you. I was just going to say, I would rather not do them both in one meeting. It feels like too much and too important to kind of feel like we're slogging through it. Thank you.
Okay, so let's plan on the 15th at 7 o'clock for our special meeting for hearing from the public on our FY21 budget and then acting on it. So that'll be one meeting on the FY21 budget. We'll schedule that for the 15th at 7 o'clock. And then I have a suggestion from Karen to do the work session on the CARES Act funding for the 9th or and since that's a work session, we would start at 5:30 and hopefully, you know, we would have, you know, a good couple, two or three hours to dig into the details and come up with a plan for distributing the. So if there's no objections to that, if that's okay, that's how I think we'll proceed. Any objections?
I'm sorry, you said the 9th or?
I was proposing the 9th at 5:30 for the CARES Act work session meeting, but I'm just proposing that. I mean, if somebody has a better day, be happy to entertain it. So, go ahead, Susan.
Yeah, could we do the 9th is the day after the general meeting. So if we don't, have to do back-to-back meetings, could we do the 10th and at least have one day in between or the 11th? That can we consider those instead of back-to-back?
Good point, Susan. Let's do the 10th. Let's give ourselves a break. So if there's no objections, we'll go ahead and go with the 10th. I see Karen over there nodding her head, I think. The 10th. Okay, is there anything else for the good of the order before we adjourn? I'm sorry, I forgot the list. The ongoing topics and projects. Karen, do you want to lead us through that? I'm sorry, Mike, go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead, Mike.
I was just going to ask if you wanted to talk about what to do about the 4th of July. I sent you that email suggestion on that.
Yeah, it's on the list.
So there's not really much on the list that needs addressed in the strategic plan. Cal and Tom, we're going to talk about the next steps. I don't know where that's at.
Excuse me, but I can't see the left-hand column.
Can you see the list? Okay. Maybe it's just taking a while to load up on your screen, Susan. Uh, All right, so it sounds like Tom and Cal still working on what's happening next with the strategic plan. Brittany, do you have anything on the dog ordinance that we postponed?
Honestly, I kind of forgot about it with everything else going on. So no, but if you guys feel like you'd like me to start working on that, I can certainly do that.
Go ahead, Joe Vanderzanen.
Just a response to Brittany. I think we've got bigger fish to fry right now.
Yeah, I would agree. Thanks, Joe.
So it sounds like we'll just keep the dog ordinance on the back burner for now.
Okay, and federal highway funds for trails. I have that. Mike and Shelley, we're going to pursue that idea with the March banks. What's the latest?
Yeah, this is Mike. Yeah, I've been doing some studying on the web, some initial stuff. One piece that I thought I wanted to explore, you know, as part of this would be some ATV trails. And I've had an introductory exchange of emails with Bruce McDonough, who's interested in working with us on that piece of the project. And he's agreed to look for some others who would form an advocates group that could work with me to see what the potential was for and what an ATV trail park area might look like. So we've got a start on that, but that's about all I've done so far on it. Look forward to following it once we get out of some of the rest of this busyness that we're in right now with COVID and budget and all of that.
Shelley, I saw your hand up. You can go ahead if you have something to add here too.
No, I don't have anything to add. Thanks.
Okay.
I was just talking with Karen. I'm sorry, I'm back and forth. But I was going to take off pilings in the harbor by water jet, request from McDonough. That doesn't really need to be on this list. We're dealing with that as we have to. The other one that's on my list, but it's not on this version, was July 4th celebration. I know Mike had some thoughts on this, so I'm going to go ahead and let Mike take it from here, and we can continue. We can have some more discussion about that. Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I just think the council needs to, I don't know that we've had any discussions about whether the 4th of July celebration proceeds. And I really have my concerns about a big celebration like that in the, with the pandemic going on. It would be a real opportunity for spreading some disease if it happens to be here at the time. And so my feeling is that the city should not sponsor a 4th of July celebration this year. And we'll just look forward to a double celebration maybe next year with the pandemic, we hope, behind us. But I don't think it's something that the city should be doing this year, unfortunately. Thanks.
Okay, any other council comment on that?
think that.
Well, I was talking.
That was me. Oh, I'm not muted anymore. I think Deb Woodruff usually hosts that.
True, she does, but it is at the city park, city-owned park.
Well, we certainly, as the city, could discourage the use of the city park for July 4th activities. Go ahead, Travis. I noticed you put your hand up. Go ahead, Travis.
Yeah, what I can do is pass on it. A lot of the other small communities around Southeast Alaska are already canceling their 4th of July events, parades, and fireworks shows altogether. Most of these aren't going to meet the social distancing reopening phase limits at this time. And I mean, it's up to the city, I guess, but if we do something, I think we should file a plan with DHHS and mitigation.
I would just, if the council's okay with this, I would just prefer that we, the city, just discourage the use of the park for 4th of July celebrations, and just basically do our best to, like I said, discourage those large gatherings on city-owned or managed property. So are folks okay with that, or? Go ahead, Susan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I would discourage use of the city park for large gatherings, but we may put our heads together in the next few meetings and think about maybe we can come up with some creative alternatives about how we celebrate our independence and our country. And maybe there's some alternate things that we can offer to take note of that special occasion. Thank you.
Okay, well, it sounds like we're done then. Thanks for hanging in there, everybody, and we'll see you next. We'll talk to you again next week.